Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, new decade. Be future ready with Zurich, the power behind your pension.
The time of the publication of her book, The Choice, which I still see is in the top 10 now. It's an amazing read, and it's one of those books that will stay with you for the rest of your life. And indeed, she is an amazing lady. And after that chat, we had her on the TV, and we ended up dancing live on television. And she is one of the most spectacularly strong individuals I've ever met in my life, and it was a real pleasure and privilege to have met her. And if you haven't read the book, you should. The Choice is the name of it. Stephen Finglas has been on. He says, on the day that we remember the 1.3 million Jews who were killed in Auschwitz, please check out Sir Nicholas Winton. He rescued over 600 children from the Holocaust in an operation called Czech Kinder Transport. He brought the children from Czechoslovakia to England, and that's Stephen in Finglas on that. That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Talk to us about protecting yourself from flu this winter at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Kickstart your future with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Good afternoon and welcome to Monday's Drive Time. Today, couple jailed for the genital mutilation of their one-year-old daughter, the first conviction under legislation introduced in 2012. Exhumation in Kerry after grave mix-up. Court hears of family devastation after one-punch assault killed father and husband, and later, six TDs into five seats just won't go. So who lose out in the reunited constituency of Leash Offaly? The text 51551. And the tweet at DriveTime RTE. The family of a man who was killed after he tried to intervene in a domestic dispute between a man and his partner, they've said they can't forgive or forget his killer. 49-year-old Jonathan Dargan, a martial arts instructor, punched Patrick Mullally in the face at around 4 a.m. on Harles Cross Road, Dublin, on the 6th of March 2016. Our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds joins me now. Paul, would you remind us of the circumstances of this case, please?
Yeah, Mary, Patrick Mullally was out celebrating his retirement from Guinness after 35 years, and he was on his way home that night, as you say, at 4 o'clock in the morning, when he and another man, Shane Cunningham, approached Jonathan Dargan and his partner on the Harles Cross Road. Now, Dargan was having a row with his girlfriend. A passing cyclist, Shane O'Donoghue, had already said that Dargan was shouting at the woman to pick something up, so he stopped his bike and said something like, "What are you at?" And he said that Dargan told him to mind his own business and threatened him that if he didn't go away, he'd stamp on his head. So Mr. Mullally and Mr. Cunningham went over to try to reason with Mr. Dargan, and Mr. Dargan punched Mr. Mullally. Mr. Mullally put his hands up to shield himself, but at least one punch connected with him. It shattered his jaw and cheekbone and knocked him to the ground. Now, the cyclist also told the trial last November that he heard Dargan shouting, "Bang, bang," as he punched the men. Now, Mr. Mullally suffered brain trauma due to the blows to the face and head, and died in hospital the next day. We also heard that Jonathan Dargan is a taekwondo, a martial arts instructor, who has also worked as a doorman. He was the head of security at Lily's Bordello, the nightclub in town, for 2 decades. He claimed in his defence that he was surrounded by the men and felt in fear and was acting in self-defence, but this was contradicted by CCTV evidence. He pleaded not guilty during the trial, but he was convicted last November by a jury of manslaughter.
Now, Patrick Mullally's widow, Joan, made a victim impact statement. What did she say?
Yeah, she was very distressed as she was giving this evidence this morning, this testimony. She broke down in tears a number of times. She was describing the effects of what she said was a brutal killing. And she was particularly conscious of the effect it had, not only on their wider family, but also on the couple's young daughter. She said bringing their young daughter, who was 10 at the time, into the hospital to see her father one last time was the hardest thing she has had to do. do. She described as well the difficulties and the pain of having to wait nearly 4 years, and the process is still continuing, 3 years for the case to come to trial. And she said when it did, her daughter asked her, why is there a trial? Did he not admit he hit daddy? Now, Miss Shields also described reading a newspaper interview a week after the killing in which Dargan begged for forgiveness. She said, Mr. Mullally will now miss watching their daughter grow up, and said, I'll never be able to forgive him for that.
Patrick Mullally's niece, Courtney, also submitted a victim impact statement. What did she say?
Again, she gave emotional testimony in the court this morning. She said that the violent death of her uncle has left many of the family suffering from anxiety, depression and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. She described what she said was the gut-wrenching loss and sadness of the family's grief. She said some of the family members have experienced suicidal thoughts. She said that Mr. Mullally was a devoted dad, a caring brother, a fun uncle, one of the happiest, friendliest persons you'd ever meet. And she said he was killed trying to do the chivalrous thing. One person ripped several lives apart with his bare hands. And she said if he had kept those hands in his pockets that night, they would have had one more extra place at the Christmas table.
Now, the convicted man, Jonathan Dargan, he had pleaded not guilty, hadn't he? But he did accept the jury verdict.
Yeah, his senior counsel, Vincent Heenahan, said today that Mr. Dargan accepts the jury's verdict, and that he indicated this to Gardaí in court on the day the guilty verdict was delivered. He said that Jonathan Dargan was not a person who drank regularly, but on the night he was very intoxicated, that he had taken cocktails and double vodka drinks. He said that alcohol wasn't an excuse or a defence, but it was a factor in these events. Mr. Dargan has no previous convictions. The court heard that his own mother was killed by a neighbour a few years ago in 2014 when a man went into their home and shot his mother dead and shot and injured his sister. The killer was later found not guilty by reason of insanity. He also said that Jonathan Dargan had written a letter of apology to the Mullally family, and he asked the detective superintendent in charge of the case to give it to the family. Now, Judge Pauline Codd said that she would remand Mr. Dargan in custody and would sentence him later this week.
Paul Reynolds, thank you very much. To Kerry now, and a body has been exhumed and reburied at a cemetery in Listowel after the burial took place in the wrong grave. And Lucy, journalist in Kerry, joins me now with more details. How did this error happen? Who's responsible, Anne?
Well, apparently it's the council who are responsible, and what we understand is that they sold the same plots twice. The error, if you can call it that, there's considerable upset about this, Mary, in North Kerry, and I believe I've been talking to somebody who's close to the families, and I believe the families have been very upset by it too. Now, apparently what happened was that a woman who died in January was buried in a plot in the St. John Paul II Cemetery in Listowel, but it transpires that she was buried alongside another woman who had died early last year, and whose grave is one of three plots. When the woman who died next year, or last year rather, I beg your pardon, when her husband visited the grave sort of 2.5-3 weeks ago, he discovered a person had been buried alongside that of his wife. And that's how it emerged. So on Friday last, the woman buried, shall we say, in the wrong plot, was exhumed and buried elsewhere in the cemetery.
And this exhumation and reburial, that had to be carried out, had it, by Kerry County Council?
Yes, this all had to be carried out by Kerry County Council, and the reburial take place within 48 hours under the Local Government and Sanitary Services Act. And the story emerged on local radio this morning. Now, initially, the council said they were not going to comment on it, and this was at the request of the families, the council said, and out of sensitivity towards them. But what is emerging now is that there is some disquiet at the way the matter was handled by the council. First of all, in putting their hands up straight away, and also in sort of, you know, reassuring the public. The public are quite upset at what has happened as well. So now the council have come out with an additional statement, and they're saying that they're going to carry out a review of procedures to ensure that this does not happen again, and that they have apologised to both families involved.
Does it appear, Anne, that they sold the same plot twice?
This is what it appears. and it hasn't been denied. It is understood that it was, I don't know what you would call it, Mary, would you call it a clerical? I don't know, I'm not certain what you would call it, but it is, apparently it was sold twice. And, I mean, there are a number of sort of parties involved in this, you know, who are apparently pretty upset by all of this, and they would include undertakers and grave diggers as well, who are not responsible at all for any of it. And yeah, this is what has happened. I think just there are 154 cemeteries, it has to be remembered, in Kerry, public cemeteries, that is. There are private ones as well, but, and they're all managed by Kerry County Council, and the plots are sold. If when a person dies, I don't believe you can actually buy a plot ahead, but it's when a member of your family dies, you can then make, you know, try and get a family plot organised. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened in the start of, I think it was March 2019.
So in this case, one family would have bought two or three plots together.
They bought three plots. Uh-huh. That's it.
Yeah.
But the person who died a few weeks ago was actually buried in one of those plots.
I see, leading to all of this. Has there been an apology from the council for the mix-up?
Well, we've been trying to ascertain that all day. Now, this evening there is a statement out from the council. Initially, I was told there hadn't been. And if there is an apology, it was probably only made today, is my understanding. But the council now confirm that an apology, a formal apology has been made, and that they have been liaising with the families. But there's still some disquiet, Mary, and especially in Listowel and up around North Kerry, you know, the people have been upset. Now, I've been speaking to people who would be respected people in the town, and they are pretty upset about it.
Okay, well, Anne, thank you very much for bringing the story to us. That's Anne Lucy there reporting from Kerry. After the break, we're going to look at election 2020 and what's happening on social media.
Whether you're into an evening of dastardly double-crossing in a royal court or double cream on a baking show, if you subscribe to a service and watch it on a TV, then you must have a TV licence. It's the law. That's just one of the terms and conditions of life in Ireland. Other terms and conditions may include mistaking Victoria Sponge for an actual historical monarch and an unusual appreciation for baking puns like life's what you bake it. But no matter what TV you consume, if you don't have a TV licence, it's a recipe for disaster. So get one at tvlicense.ie or at any post office. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
There's a lot more to financial and investment planning than finance. There's you, your family, your life. At Davy, we get to know what's important to you before we talk numbers. By developing a more personal relationship, it's easier when we do talk about financial life plans. Knowing what's really important to you means we can create the financial life plan and investment strategy that's right for you. Let's start the conversation. Call us today or search Davy. Davy. It's not just business, it's personal. J&E Davy, trading as Davy, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. We take our responsibilities personally.
Take a fresh look at Senator Windows. You're looking at more than superior quality, security and efficiency. You're looking at €500 instant cash back when you spend €5,000 or more on Senator's UPVC range of windows and doors. The €500 cashback offer must end 29th of February, so call Senator Windows now on 1850 774455 or visit senatorwindows.ie. Terms and conditions apply.
Hit the refresh with 20% off the new Homebase paint range. Homebase, feels good to be home. Exclusions at homebase.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Pather King. For almost two decades, RTÉ's What in the World has been bringing stories to your homes. Stories of hope and inspiration. Stories of oppression and exploitation. Stories from Africa, Asia and the Americas. Now, a dedicated exhibition brings all of these stories together.
Throughout 2020, this free exhibition tours the country. See it at Kevin Street Library, Dublin, January 15th to 31st. See RTÉ.ie for details. What in the World? 50 countries, 50 stories. Presented by KMF Productions, Irish Aid and RTÉ.
Drive Time with Mary Wilson on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now, we're just past the halfway point of election 2020 with a further 2 weeks of campaigning to go. This election has been talked about in terms of young voters and their digital lives. But what are the issues and who are the parties gaining traction online? Stephen O'Leary is the founder of, how do you pronounce this? Is it Olitico?
Olitico.
Olitico, apologies. And you're experts in social media monitoring and analysis. And we're going to have a look at how social media stats for election 2020 are working out so far. Just take the week gone by, really, and tell us what the statistics are telling you about what's in use, what's in play, what's happening.
So in the last week, there's been a slight increase in the level of conversation. So we base our analysis on what's publicly available on Twitter. And since the election was called, over the last 2 weeks, there's been 125,000 tweets published. And that includes the Monday before the election, when there was an awful lot of speculation and essentially people were saying it's definitely going to happen. And what's really helpful is an awful lot of the people who are engaged in this conversation are using one specific hashtag, and that is GE2020. And that makes it much easier for us because it is very specific. It's not really being used in any other jurisdiction at the moment. And we know this too because Twitter has added a custom image at the end of this. Mm-hmm. So now when you look at it, you see the little Irish flag at the end. But 105,000 of the tweets we analysed included that. There are others using others. So GE20 commonly used, General Election 2020 there too. But really, if you want to be involved in the conversation.
And then when we come around to the big debates and the discussions, whether that's on radio and television, how do you look at those? Are they garnering a good deal of Twitter feed?
Yeah, they are. I mean, outside of those three main hashtags that we discussed, the next two in terms of most used are RTEPT and VMTV.
That's prime time.
Exactly,
yeah.
And the VMTV big debate.
Okay, the Virgin Media big debate last week.
We would expect, again, Claire Byrne to feature when this analysis is refreshed in a week's time. So without question, those major moments on TV are what drive conversation online.
And can you look at how much of the content is original?
Yes, we can. So about 25% of it. That's what we've seen kind of coming through. And again, this would be typical of most topics that we see. So you have a cohort of people who are creating and generating their own content. And then you have a large cohort who are resharing it. Mm-hmm. So you'll see candidates sharing stuff from parties and vice versa. You'll obviously see campaigners, supporters, those who oppose. There's a lot of different ways in which, and you even see people sharing things they don't like. You know, so there have been several moments during the campaign so far when that's happened.
The most shared tweets, give me maybe one or two or three of those.
Yeah, this is really interesting because, again, it shows the power of traditional media to create content that is then shared and goes viral on social. And so the most shared tweet is actually an interview from The Late Late Show with Emmett Kerwin. And it's not new. This is an interview.
Emmett Kerwin, the actor, activist.
Absolutely, yeah. And he had a specific quote that was included in this. It wasn't blokes in tracksuits that ruined this country. It was blokes in suits. And essentially, the person who shared this shared it again because it puts my frustrations more succinctly than I ever could. And those kind of quotes, those kind of pieces of media, we see this all the time. Clips from traditional media essentially being shared and going viral on social media.
Any other one there that jumps out at you that's been doing the rounds?
I suppose that, you know, we know that homelessness is a major talking point in terms of the campaign. And certainly there was an image from the homeless cafe of an elderly woman eating her dinner from a plastic bowl. And Colette Brown shared this and her tweet, you know, describing it essentially as it was truly shocking and should be the defining image of Ireland as it faces into a general election. That was shared widely. And it's not the only image of homelessness. Mm. The scene from the canal too is another image that was shared widely during this campaign. Although what we've seen in the last week is, compared to the first week when homelessness was the number one talking point, that has moved on and it's been replaced by housing and health, which are now the two most talked about things from a campaign point of view.
And as we move into this week, can you see where we're going? Are there any trends starting to emerge?
It's hard to see us getting away from those two topics. Mm-hmm. Certainly that's where it's trending at the moment. I guess a lot will depend on how the debate goes this evening.
Are pensions making it in at all?
They're not, but that's possibly to do with the, I mean, they're
the demographic.
There, don't get me wrong. So they're one of the probably top five or top 10 most talked about topics. But there's probably an element to do with the demographic on Twitter that would impact that too. I'm sure if this was analysis of another media, that might be different.
Now, party leaders, how are they all doing? Leo Varadkar, Mary Lou MacDonald, Micheál Martin, Brendan Howland, and so on through the other parties.
Yeah, we've seen a shift here too, because I suppose what's really important is when we talk about Leo Varadkar, as the Taoiseach, as the person who called the election, he is always going to have a much higher share of voice or mention rate here. And that has to be noted when we're looking at these numbers. But he leads the way, 7,500 tweets mentioning his name.
As against?
Well, what's interesting here again is when we conducted this analysis a week ago, Micheál Martin was in second place, but he's been replaced. Mary Lou MacDonald is now second in the most mentioned at 2,600 tweets, followed by Micheál Martin at 2,200. And again, what we saw was a huge amount of conversation taking place around the fact that she was not part of the leaders' debate took place last week.
And when you look at parties, take out the leader name and just Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Sinn Féin and so on.
Yeah, really, again, there's only kind of two parties that are at the absolute top here, and that is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They're the most mentioned. But what's really important to note is that, again, this is not a case of only their supporters telling us how great they are. Because what we did look at was we looked at the hashtags that were being used around the different parties. And that's what's really interesting, in that Want Green, Vote Green is the most used party hashtag. And you can be confident that when the hashtag is used like that, it's being used by those who support the party. This would indicate that the Green Party is being talked about a lot by its supporters online.
Other election issues, you mentioned housing, homelessness in the first week, health, pensions, you say, are getting a look in, but maybe not the traction because of the demographic. What about childcare issues you would think would be big out there? Climate?
Yes, both are there. I suppose we were surprised that climate hasn't been further up, given the amount of conversation that's taking place. And again, given how strong, obviously, the Green Party vote was at the elections last year and this green wave that we saw taking place. It's not to say that there isn't a lot of conversation taking place, but at 2,700 mentions, it's less than half of housing or health. So we do see this clear hierarchy of topics that are being discussed and talked about online.
Now, I'm interested as well in words that are put out there, keywords, and whether those words are coming from the political parties or coming from individual tweets, you know, words like change and so on.
Yeah, and I think this is probably the thing that we need to be careful of when we look at the most talked about issues, because, you know, homelessness was a really good example of that. When we've seen that trend so highly here, it's not that this was a topic of conversation where people were campaigning for it to change. It was one really single major news story that brought it in there. So what you do find is that when something happens in the news and it gets talked about, even if it's not a massive issue for the electorate, you will find the words emerging in this kind of analysis.
What other warnings would you put around the interpretation of what's happening in social media?
The biggest issue that we see, or the biggest concern we would have, is that politicians and political parties are treating social as a broadcast forum. So, you know, TV stations, radio stations, newspapers, they're made for pushing out your message. They're made and they're designed for having that type of thing. But imagine knocking on the door of someone on the campaign trail and just starting to talk and not even saying hello or asking them how they were or what issues affected them. I mean, you'd have the door closed in your face.
So you mean like an unchallenged platform?
Yeah, but also forgetting that this is, like, the clue is in the name. It's social media, and yet so few politicians and political parties have conversations because they're afraid to be involved. And yet conversations are what engage an electorate. That's often what can change minds. Really, pushing out a message is not going to change the electorate's mind.
We've talked an awful lot about Twitter in this. What about Facebook? What about Instagram?
Yeah, both important platforms, and Facebook arguably more important than Twitter in terms of reaching a broader spectrum of the Irish public. Certainly far more users on it than Twitter. I suppose what we are seeing is political parties and politicians getting far more sophisticated in the types of advertising that they're pushing out. So the understanding is there now that you don't just have to send a blanket message to the whole country. You can send a specific message to the electorate in your area. And you can go further than that. It doesn't have to just be geographic. It can be gender, age. Other interests can be used when you want to get your message drilled right down.
All right. Fascinating stuff. Stephen O'Leary, thank you very much for coming into us.